podcast. KellerKellerOfficial.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Beatbox created.
KellerKeller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
KellerKeller Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, KellerKeller Podcast, live and direct, central London, or central as you need to be, choose to be, want to be, on this fine morning. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk. Without a doubt, if you haven't checked out the Kellervision app, free download, you are severely missing on your street culture doses every day. Free download, Android, Apple, out on the app stores. And where to begin with my fine guest, a very good friend of mine, somebody that pretty much introduced me into hip-hop. And I warned him before we started there was going to be some gushing going on here. He knows my nan. He knows my mum. He's a proprietor of records. He's a club creator. He's an award winner. He's a breakbeat producer, collaborator across funk, breakbeat, hip-hop and more. DJ Crafty Cuts. How are we, my brother?
Oh, mate, that was probably the introduction of all time. And isn't that weird that kind of like touching on all those subjects, like all the people that we knew and all the... You know, that just brings back a lot of memories as you're talking like that. I kind of remember sitting in that tiny record shop in Worthing and you walking in and doing all those little funny noises that you used to do. And I just kind of think to myself, oh my God, that it seems like such a long time ago.
Oh, mate, I tell you, boys.
But you look good, mate. You're looking well.
Thank you. So are you.
Thanks, mate.
It's like Peter fucking Pan in here.
A bit of sun and doesn't help. It does help, sorry. Yeah. And I've got a nice place down in Worthing, so... You know, I'm enjoying life at the moment, spending a lot of time with my children. Beautiful. And getting creative with my music and stuff. So, as we know, and we'll probably talk about it, it's been a very strange 14, 15, 16 months.
Yeah, it's been a very crazy time.
Yeah, it's really, it's like a roller coaster. It's just up and down constantly.
A fucking Crafty Cuts in the house. What do you say? For those of you who don't know about the double K in terms of pioneering breakbeat, I mean, this was... I know I'm going to be speaking to the choir. There's going to be a lot of people here that are very familiar with what you've done. But I said it before I jumped on, bro. Just out of curiosity, I thought, oh, I'll go on your bio. Because, you know, I know you a lot in a load of different scenarios for all of my best part of my musical life. But when I see how much stuff you've done, you've got a theory on this, haven't you? You know, people just don't have... Me included, we don't have that attention to follow things through like we may have done with our more celebrated favourite acts back in the day. It's just it's too much information nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's so easy. We were just talking about that a moment ago. It's like, for example, you know, there might be an artist that you're aware of and you haven't really paid a great deal of attention to that person, and then suddenly you like look at their bio or you listen to some of their music and go, oh my God, they've done that record. I didn't realise, you know. For example, like Bookham. Bookham's a great example. Danny's a fantastic DJ, really professional artist. And if you go back to like some of his early recordings, you'll go, oh my God, I had no idea he ran that label and he did that.
True.
And he made this. And it's like everyone's got a story, everyone's got something, you know, within the music industry that they might have done, whether it's one or two records or a bundle of records or a lot of different things. And they might have had their hands in different pies or fingers in different pies and done like production on some hip hop tracks, or they worked, or they were the DJ for a rapper, or like we were just talking about a minute ago, DJ Renegade. And it just, you just kind of think, I didn't realise that. Oh yeah, of course, it all makes sense. And they're little things that join the dots that fix the jigsaw and make the puzzle.
Yeah,
know,
some of it's like urban myth, isn't it? Like we were talking about Renegade and Son of Noise and who else? DJ Supreme. We got into a bit of UK hip hop just before we started, and these myths of like, oh yeah, he did that, didn't he? He did that.
Yeah,
did
that.
I love those stories. You know, the deeper
joining
you go,
the dots.
Yeah.
Roots Maneuver.
Yeah,
and Charlie Tuna joining the dots.
Hey, listen. There we go. We're beginning right there. Charlie Tuna, yourself. This was, for me, the last time I saw you guys perform was at, I can't remember what fucking festival.
Camden? Camden Assembly Hall?
It was a festival. I'm sure it was a festival.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm just trying to think which one it would have been. Maybe, I've done so many with Charlie, but
It was, for me, it was like seminal. It's like you managed. It was a zeitgeist moment where an American act and a UK alternative DJ, comparable to what Charlie's
exactly
come
from.
It was fucking great. It was great.
Thanks, mate.
And the mixes, you know, you go on YouTube and check them out. They got albums. You know, they've done their thing.
It was an amazing experience, and we're still really good friends. We speak a lot. It's been very difficult because the COVID thing just kind of shut it down. And we were kind of doing some other stuff and preparing some other stuff. But we're still working together on a few new pieces, which I'll go into in a minute. But I met Charlie through the Funk Hunters, Canadian sort of glitch hop, breaky kind of producers. Really nice guys, Nick and Dunks. And they were touring with Charlie. And I'd always wanted to work with, like, Jurassic 5 and Charlie Tuna, always, especially as I'd been recently started writing hip-hop with Alex Chambers, who I worked with in the studio. And we'd wrote a track, I'm trying to think what it was called now, but this was Hands High, that became Hands High. And it's got a piano riff, and it's got a really nice old-school hip-hop sort of feel. And I was desperate to get it to Jurassic 5, because I thought, God, if these guys performed on this, this has got winner. Chicken dinner written all over it. And I was like, and they were touring Brighton. And I spoke to Nick Middleton from the Funk Hunters, and I said, can you send this to Charlie, see if he'd like it? I'll come and see you in Brighton tonight. So I went and saw them, and I got to meet Charlie, and I was well excited. I'd met him years before when they performed with Cut Chemist and DJ Shadow. I think you may have been there.
Of course.
At the Zap Club, I think it was.
Dude, again, combinations and just putting music out just the way that they felt it.
That's all right. No, you're totally right. And
inspiring shit.
Yeah, definitely. I was always in love with the whole sort of party, funky, just really nice hip-hop vibe. And that's why I felt this track fitted, like Charlie's and the rest of the guys' voices. And Charlie loved it. And Nick said, why don't we, you know, if I'm in the studio the next day. So I think this was a Wednesday night. So Thursday night I was in the studio in Mepham in Kent. And Nick came down with Charlie and got him. And luckily, you know, if it wasn't for Nick, this would never have happened. Charlie loved the track. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I've got Charlie Tuna in the studio. Bang! And the magic happened. He wrote like the track Hands High in like 3 hours. Mad. And he used some of the vocals from Going Outside, and he saw a barn owl, and he used that in the lyrics and just other little things. And he absolutely nailed it. And it was the beginning of something really special. And we just, I don't know, we just connected really well. He just loved the vibe that me and Alex were creating in the studio. It was just a wonderful environment. He loved the sound. It was different. It kind of had a slightly electronic, sort of different style drums, but it was still funky. It had that backbone of funk, and just, it was organic. It was really real. And Charlie really liked that. And I wasn't like your traditional turntablist DJ. You know, I use CDJs, but I could scratch and
He does cut. Cuts hard.
But Charlie just liked the idea. It wasn't about that I was a real hip-hop DJ. It was like, this is something fresh, this is something new, this is something exciting, this is something different. You know, and we all need to go on little paths, little curveballs and takers. But my God, we could not believe ourselves the reaction. Next minute, you know, we're starting to write an album. We've done a collaboration with Dynamite called It Ain't My Fault.
Hold tight, Dynamite.
Big up, Dynamite.
All day.
Love you, bro.
One of my favourite hype men MCs, full stop, to be fair.
He's amazing, isn't he? Yeah. And we've done this track called It Ain't My Fault, and next minute, you know, it's just blowing up, and we started writing an album called The Adventures of a Reluctant Superhero.
Yeah, mad.
And we got the Jake the Detonator to do all the artwork with the characters. And
always killed it on the album covers as well. You always got that, it's that funk. It's mine's with Parliament, you know what I mean? Like, you always had that kind of cartoon, comic-y, funness.
We had that with Trick of Technology with A Skill, so it was a good sort of combination to carry on that sort of vibe. So I think, you know, just talking about this and everything involved within, like, graffiti and artwork and stuff like that, I think it all combines perfectly, and that's the beauty of hip-hop, is when you have a good product, which I think The Adventures was, and then suddenly you had good artwork and good PR, and a good topic, it all combines. It's like when you, just for example, it's like when you write a disco house record. If you've got that perfect singer on there that just looks good and works, and then you put a little video with it, bang, it's like the magic is created. It's exactly the same with hip hop. You get good artwork, you get like a good vibe and a good creation. And once the whole package is put together, people are like, I really like this.
Mm.
And then obviously they see it first and then they hear it. Plus Radio 6 got behind it. And big up to Lauren Laverne for helping us with that, and Steve Lamack and all the BBC
people. One of the last standing proper radio station. Big up Capital Extra as well, but I would certainly say 6 Music for the alternative.
Yes, yeah.
Kills it.
They had us do the live show up in Liverpool, which was a great experience. And then suddenly me and Charlie were just touring the world, and we were both, it both happened quite unexpectedly for us. And Charlie was a busy guy, so trying to fit that in his schedule was, you know, was a mission. And also with me, I was like extremely busy with like all my other DJ shows. So I had to speak to my manager and make a decision. And then next minute, you know, we're touring Australia and Canada. And no, we didn't actually tour Canada, America, New Zealand and Europe. Like Europe was crazy busy. And we must have done about 250 shows in like 3 years. But it did get it did hit us hard because, you know, we got sick on tour a few times and it knocked us sideways.
Right, we're going to come back to this. This is a very interesting... But I need to ask you a question. As a producer, because, you know, there's going to be a lot of people out there thinking, well, that's just like... That's like textbook how it's meant to roll. But as a producer, you have to kind of... And this is only my perception from previous conversations, and I'm sure you'll relate to what I'm going to say. You can add value if you can. You've got to construct a format, and you've got to create a project. And it's not as easy as just like, oh yeah, that voice will work with that. It's the you producers, you shape a sound, and then before you know it, the product is coming to life, and there's an umbrella of a feel and a look, and that must be quite a turbulent time coming from something, nothing to making something.
It is really. That's a really good point, Lee. It's like any form of music. Let's take, for example, like Skrillex. Now, Skrillex is an incredibly talented human being, and he can write music, you know, whether it's pop or dubstep or whatever he's writing. But it's the team. So all the videos, all the PR, all the promotion, they're as good at what they do as what he is as good as what he does. So when you start putting all these groups together, same with Tiesto and same with all the big DJs, producers.
DJ Snake and all that, ones of the... Yeah,
exactly, that's a great example. The product is just like, the artwork's really good, the videos are really good. His music is, you know, according to his fans, brilliant. And the same with Noisier. It's all the detail, attention to detail is really incredible. And when you deliver this product to the people... If it's got all this weight behind it, it's like, wow, this is really good. If you're into that, you know. And then with hip-hop, it's the same with hip-hop. You know, the artwork's really dope and the music is really good. And that's what we try to achieve, like working with Lyrics Born, Gift of Gab and Dynamite and Sky from More Cheaper. You know, these are people tip-top.
And Sky, what a voice. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Great, and these are really good artists and really nice people, really professional people. And, you know, you ask them to do something and they don't dilly-dally or they don't like, you know, they just get on it and they're so professional. And you're like, this is exactly what you need to help you move and go forward.
And have a team around you that kind of... So, curiously, if you take, for instance, a Diplo or a Tiesto or someone like that. So they have a team around them and their team hedges bets on this project, whether it's a single or an album, go to the market and the market reacts and all of the lights come on as green and bells and whistles, it's off to the races. There's still that inception and you've still got to, as a producer, as a brand, you've got to encourage that team. You've got to excite that team. That, again, I'm just putting it back to you. That's where you come in, and that must be such a process in your head to try and compartmentalize.
That's probably the part that I do the most, because I like to think of the big picture and where we can go, what we can do, how we can gel this with that. So it's kind of like, you know, making that all come together as a project. And that's what I think I was really good at. Hence, having experience within the record shop, knowing people's knowledge of music. Mm. You know, when you was in my shop, someone would walk past, I'd play a jungle record, Congo Natty really loud, mm. or a funk sample mm. that everyone knew.
Because it wasn't just hip-hop, it was everything.
No, it was
everything.
Yeah, it was
drum and bass, everything,
yeah.
yeah.
And people would hear it and go, oh, what's that? I like that. Especially in Brighton, where it was like you had loads more people.
Well, this is Worthing as well. Well, yeah. Worthing, Across the Tracks was the
Yeah,
store,
Instant Vibes was what it was first called, Instant after Vibes. Across the Tracks.
Wow, geez.
And we had that Dan, who worked for DC Comics, do the graffiti on
That's
the outside.
That's right. And Mex used to work there, Big Up Mex as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, Big Up Mex. I spoke to him the other day, actually. He's
oh, tell him I said, I don't see
yeah,
him for ages.
Guy. Blackgrass, Big Up Blackgrass. They wrote great music, him and Carl, four. So, yeah, it's about... joining the dots, like that's the talk of the that's the subject. Mm. Joining the dots is so important because if you can get all these things together, then once you deliver that product, you know, people are like, well, this is perfect, mm-hmm. and that is the hardest thing. But I've got a good team. My manager's a really great guy, and I've got really
Abel,
good,
right?
Yes, that's
Hold
right.
Tight, Abel.
Big up Abel. And these are all really nice people to work with, and I like to work with good people. I don't really like to work with people who might be fantastic at what they do, but they piss other people off because they can be rude mm-hmm. or they can be forgetful.
I always feel like a manager when people. Okay, right, so this could get spicy. I'm not going down this road, but sometimes, you know, when you have to speak to the manager or the artist says, speak to a manager, and you get a certain temperature from that manager, you know that the manager is only an extension to the artist. So what they represent as a manager is ultimately the attitude of the artist.
You know, that's a really good point.
It's true, isn't it?
That's a really good point, yeah. You know, we're not saying that everyone who's got a manager... and if their managers can be a bit of a piece of work, that they're a piece of work. Yeah. But that is a good point. You know, I consider myself as a decent person. Really,
come on, yes.
Thanks, man. I do. And, you know, I've got a lot of love to give and I've got a lot of nice... I'm just a decent person, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think my manager's exactly the same. And you're right.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a really good point. You know, I haven't got a bad word to say about anyone. It's not my opinion to diss someone, even if I don't like it.
Mm-mm.
You know, I respect that person for what they do in any form of music. And that comes from having a record shop selling funk, disco, hip hop, rave, happy hardcore, techno, pop,
it's true.
Rock. But, you know,
but
everything.
So look, right. Just to give you guys a bit of a background, the background scoop on how we first met. So I was a young, thirsty. I think I must have been about 12 years old, man. 13,
no,
bro.
Really?
Bro, yeah. This is showing both of our ages. I will not disclose any further the information. Mm. But I wasn't from Worthing. Worthing, for those outside of the UK, is like a town just in the south coast next to Brighton and Hove on the south coast. And that's where Martin's shop, the original shop, Instant Vibes, which was then Cross the Tracks. And my nan lived just down the road.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Big up my nan. She's still alive. She's doing
God
well.
Bless.
And I remember one time, right? This was my seminal moment into hip-hop. I'd always come around and got 12-inch records. I was waiting for Onyx, back the fuck up.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the way it's spelt on the record is one word, back the
yeah,
fuck up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I said to my nan, I was like, nan, can you go into the record store and ask Martin if he has a copy of Back Duffer Cup, as in like, it's like a buttercup, but it's called Back Duffer Cup. And my nan went for it. She was like, okay, so I can only imagine my nan of like 70 something walking in.
I can actually remember it
yeah.
because it was such a surprise that, and you know,
yeah.
a nan would come in and ask for that record. I actually met Onyx on the plane.
Did
They're
ya?
Really nice guys.
One of my heroes, then.
Yeah, that was a great track. Mm. They've done some really good tunes on it.
Mm.
Slam, obviously, as we know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I met them on the plane. And that's another thing with Charlie. I met a lot of dudes and hip-hop acts that I've, you know, looked up to and had massive respect for. And they just chatting away with
me. But you have to be aware of the scene. And that's the thing. When you have a record store, or when you have a club night, when you're a promoter especially, or you've got a radio station, anything like that, you even if you, whether you like an act or you don't, you become so in tune to understanding the nuances of a sound or the personality of an act. It must have been mad. You just like, as you come out of the record store era and getting into more DJ territory, I remember when we did a gig together at Miami and it was just like a weird moment of, wow, it's really happened,
yeah,
Martin.
From back there to yeah. this now. It's incredible, mm, really, when you think about it.
Mm.
But it's like a natural progression. Most DJs or producers or etc. might have worked in a record shop or gone to a record shop to buy records.
Mm.
And having my, you know, basis of selling music to people really helped me as a DJ, because I would analyse, and this was my thing, I'd analyse when people walked past, looking at what they were wearing, and think, right, I reckon they might be into this.
Mm.
So I might play like a disco record or a funk record and stuff like that. So always playing things that people could familiarise with or think, oh, I, what is that? Oh, that's good.
That's good branding,
man. And entice people in.
Yeah.
And because obviously I had to make some money from the record shop, and I was doing really well at one point, and I was going all across the world and finding really cool records. I was buying like really rare hip-hop records, really rare funk records, and so I was selling new and old records together. And basically, I was also learning about like Jimi Hendrix, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, and other stuff like that. So going to car boot sales and record stores, record fairs, and buying records to sell in my record shop. So my knowledge of music became vast. And that is how that really helped me become a better DJ, mm. because my knowledge of music was stronger and bigger. And it helped me just become, you know, more aware that there was like, you know, if I played a Prodigy record at the end of my set, but played the original Jar Screechy or Walk and Skank from SL2 or something like that.
It's just like a nod to the old school that you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you another story later on. I'll tell you it now. There was a club called Home in Leicester Square. Really, it was kind of trying to go against Fabric at the time. And it was massive. And they had the biggest names in there. And this was before I played at Fabric. And I went there and I played a three-hour set on three decks, and vinyl. And I think I might have had a fourth CDJ. It might have even been before CDJs. Absolutely tore it up. Played one of the best sets I've ever played. And I thought, I smashed it. And I had the crowd going nuts. I thought, this is going to do really well for my DJ career. Because this was at the early stages of my DJ career.
And all the attention was on this home place because it was the...
Yeah. I thought, yes. This guy, this Brazilian guy, I never knew who he was. He came on. His first record was Jar Screechy, Walk and Skank. This was kind of like early days, even before going on the internet and Google and searching. So you had to find out what that record was.
Mm.
You had to know what that record was.
And
that was
own
his
it.
First record, yeah. He dropped Jar Screechy, Walk and Skank. And I was like, and the crowd just went bananas. They went nuts. And I was like, they'd just forgotten about everything that I'd just done in 3 hours of music. That one record that dude had just played just blew my whole set away. And I was like, there's an important lesson that I've just learned. Never overestimate how good you think you are or what you've done. There's always someone else out there who can either change things or do something better with just one quick moment.
Ooh.
And I was like, you know what? I need to improve. And that helped me. And then I started changing things around. I started mixing my music up more. I started playing music from other genres.
Mm.
And I started playing hip-hop, breakbeat, funk, you know, old school, and jungle and stuff like that. And it came at a time where Britain was really into that, you know, like the big beat movement and everything else.
Yeah, that's right.
So people would go to a club and they'd hear all those sounds of music in one night, hence how we set up Supercharged, and Supercharged became so popular in Brighton because we had all that.
Hmm.
We had funk, disco, breaks,
hip-hop. Kind of the home of, and drum and bass. It was the home of it, you know.
And that helped me. And that one little lesson that I learned, I think, really helped Crafty Cuts become a better DJ.
Yeah.
And just never really and stop thinking that, you know, you're the shit, because there's always someone else out there who's way better than you are.
Yeah, yeah. Time is a constant. There's always someone new, something next, something else, isn't there?
Exactly.
There is a myth. And it's regarding your hand, actually, because you cut your fingers, didn't you? So explain the story behind that. And was that, did that help facilitate or allow you to focus more on your record collecting and the DJing?
Yeah, yeah, okay. that's an interesting story.
Yeah.
So I was just getting into like hip hop and DJing, and I was learning to like scratch on my, I just got some turntables, some Technics turntables and a decent mixer. And I was practicing, albeit to the, I used to piss my ex-wife off big time of cutting up Alan Fish the Soul, It's time. And good times. Just repeating. That's all she could hear in the next room. And so drive her mad.
She's X.
X. Bless her. I got two wonderful children with her. We've got twins, Future Flex, who's my son, who's now a DJ.
Get out of here.
Yeah, isn't that mad? And he's really good. He's just signed some tracks to Declines lately.
Love becomes awesome. See what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. See, the future is here. He's got, you know what I mean? He's backed up. You got, you know, like, conveyor belt of crafty cuts. The new crafty cuts.
Yeah, the conveyor belt. So basically, I was a wood machinist. And I used to make fireplaces, believe it or not. And obviously, that was my form of income. And one day I said to my ex-wife, I said, oh, I don't feel very well. I don't feel great today. And I was working a lot of hours. I was doing like 70, 80 hours a week then because I had a big mortgage. It was, and there was a bit of a recession going on. So I had to make ends meet. So I went in not feeling that great into work. This is when I was living in Bognor Regis. And unfortunately, I had an accident and lost the tops of my fingers. And then I was obviously laid off work for a year. And then I had to wait because I was an unskilled machinist. So it was actually their fault. So I got compensation. I had to wait 2 years. And during that time, I spent a lot of time at home, finding myself and learning how to DJ differently again. Because, although theoretically, I am right-handed, which was really good because I can still scratch.
Still do anything, yeah.
But I couldn't, you know, be ambidextrous.
It's like the Tony Iommi of fucking DJ mixing. So, you know what I mean? It's like you've got your skill in the cuts. Probably won't be the same as anybody else's because of these, you know, quote-unquote handicaps. You know what I mean?
It was an extreme devastation. I thought, I'm
quite lucky.
You thought
it was over?
Yeah, I thought it was over. And I had a lot of really good DJs around me that, you know, I wished that I could continue my progression and it's getting better. But obviously, I fell behind. And then eventually, when I taught myself, I got the money from the compensation. I bought a ton of records at a car boot sale. Most amazing records, by the way. And that kind of opened up the door. And then I had all these records in my house. Really peed off my ex-wife again. A whole room of just, you know, thousands and thousands of records. And then a record store came along. I put all these bought the record store, put all these records into the record. Hence, Instant Vibes was born. And then I got another shop in Brighton, HVR.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I met a lot of different people in Brighton and I was writing music and getting in the studio in between the little time that I had and playing football as well. I remember Saturdays we'd play football and during the week I'd be writing music.
You were well into your football, weren't you?
Yeah, I love football. And I kind of like used the compensation money to set up a record shop, which then opened the door to me meeting like Norman Cook. And he walked into my shop one day and I cut an acetate of a track called Give Me the Funk. And I played it to Norman. I said, oh, Norman, you know, I was quite nervous. Oh, you think you might like this? And it was a sample of The Breaks, Curtis Blow, loads of samples. And he goes, man, I absolutely love that. That's really good. And on the other side was my crafty intro. And I was like, what do? Do I give him this acetate that just cost me 50 quid that I just made like a couple of weeks ago? Or do I keep it? And I thought, no, give it to Norman. Give it to him.
Go.
And said, look, you have this. And he was like, really? And he played it on the radio.
Because you gave it to him, you know, that's a huge, you know, a huge head nod.
Lucky he didn't play the jingle on the other side. He's like, oh my God, I played the wrong track. Anyway, he played Give Me the Funk. So, Ministry of Sound got hold of me and said, have you got any more music? Like, this was then the beginning of like when Big Beat was huge. And yep, I went back and with the engineer that I was using, Chris Sargent at the time, we wrote like an EP and this is a really cool story in a minute to go alongside this. And we sampled a track from Get Carter, but with Michael Caine. The bass line is doon doon doo doon doon doo doon doon doo 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 doo. Who is it? Is it? And we used an old school hip hop vocal. They used this record. I think I signed this to this movie, Mean Machine, with Guy Ritchie movie, before we signed to Ministry of Sound. And they used it, and my ex-manager at the time licensed it, and everything was really good. And I went to the premiere, and it was a Guy Ritchie movie, so Madonna was there, Jason Statham was there, Kelly Brook was there, Claudia Schiffer was there, and I met all these people, and I sat there with my ex-wife in Leicester Square to the premiere, and as the opening track come on, it was my track. And if it wasn't for Ministry asking me to write more music, I probably wouldn't have wrote that record. So it's amazing. And then next minute, you know, Crafty Cuts was born. I was just like getting offers for China, Australia, tours. And then I signed to Finger Licking Records. And then everything, the whole breakbeat movement was open. I started winning awards. And I was just like, my God, I was just living the dream. Absolutely what? Living the dream.
I mean, the word serendipity comes into play quite often in the podcast. But when you take something so severe, like losing your fingers, and throw it back as a positive and just going with the flow, you nailed it.
Yeah, I like to try and take a negative and make it into a positive. And I believe that, people. If you've got anything bad that's happened in your life, or anything sad, or and things that are making you feel down, and you've got negative thoughts in your mind, just focus. Even something simple like this. Even if you like thinking, I really need a holiday, actually plan your holiday in your head and think, oh my God, wouldn't it be nice if we could go to Florida or California or Spain and just have a break. And then start picturing yourself on a beach or drinking a nice beer in the hot weather or camping with the kids or whatever it might be, and turn your negative thoughts into something positive. And it just brings a little bit of a lift in your life and it just gives you something to focus on and like, or even like jotting things down in your diary or just like focusing on some good memories or things that you remember and you think, you know what, I want to do that again. I want to picture myself being, and that's what I'm always doing, always thinking about, you know, what I could create, just like what you do with the podcast. You've had so many great people on here, and I know, you know, after you finish this, you'll be thinking, oh, I wonder who I could get next, or I wonder who's available, etc., etc. And you've always got to be thinking positively and thoughtfully, and these thoughts can lead on to really lifting your energy and your vibe. And I'm always thinking like that. I'm thinking about two or three things. Sometimes can make my head a bit cloudy and a bit foggy, but like, you know, I'm writing.
That's what you got managers for. Big up Abel again.
And like, that's what I'm always doing. Like at the moment, I've got two projects which we'll talk about in a bit that I'm focusing on, along with some other ideas as well. And it keeps me buzzing. It keeps me alive. It keeps me happy. You know, it tires me out for sure, but it's exciting. I enjoy it.
I have these ideas, and ones that to a lot of people are like time consuming, stressful. What, I've got to get up and do that kind of shit, kind of thing. But it's these things that get us up in the morning, isn't it? As not just creative people, because everyone's creative in one form or another. It's a tenacity. You come from a working place, you know. I think, but bear in mind, we come from a very similar area of the country. There is a working class mentality in these areas, and I work that I can't think of anything worse than just sitting down doing nothing.
No.
Do you know what I mean? So you must be the same. It's that feeling of, it doesn't matter how
motivation,
many.
Motivation, it's hard.
It doesn't matter how many projects are going. It's like, even if it takes 3 months for something to come to fruition. Like us even doing a podcast now, it took time, you know?
Yeah, we talked about this a long time ago.
You've just got to have something to get up in the morning for, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is really difficult. This last year has been horrendous. I mean, you know, I've lost my dad, I lost my stepdad.
Rest in peace. Well,
thanks, man. And I've not been on a plane for like 14 months now. And I used to be on a plane every week. Not that going on a plane makes a difference, but it's routine. It's like someone who goes running. They go running once, twice, three times a week, maybe four times a week, or every day. And it's something that they do, and it's something that they look forward to and enjoy, or practicing football, or whatever your chosen subject, or whatever you do. I would be like on a Friday heading to an airport, even if it's just going to Edinburgh or Spain or wherever, and I'd be preparing, packing my bag, getting all my things organised. And that would be my job. And I'd look forward to it. And it'd be a new challenge, something new, meeting new people, new faces, you know, destinations unknown. And it would be great. And now I haven't done that in over a year. And it just seems like massive things missing on. And then spending a lot of time at home, negative thoughts, just like feeling very lethargic, very tired. Very like, you know, don't get me wrong, I've spent some wonderful times with my family and my children, especially. But, you know, with like career wise, the only thing that's kept me going is doing my streams, which have been fantastic, and writing music. Those two things in my job wise have kept me, you know, on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, finding things in your life, things, positive things, like a trip away or having had a trip away and referring back to that feeling that you had and want, you know, thinking forward and doing something like that again. That's definitely from an artist's point of view where we definitely, you know, got trumps, because we did that. We do that. We go away, and we. I mean, we've crossed paths in Canada, Miami, you know, like everywhere. We've been, you know what I mean? And always a surprise, always fucking good times hanging out. That's kind of a holiday, though, isn't it?
It's like a busman's holiday, is the old saying, isn't it? Work. I mean, my job was, it's like being a Formula One racing driver or a footballer. It's like one of the best jobs you can get, being a DJ and a producer. You know, and I'm very blessed and very lucky, and I thank all my fans and everyone who supports me.
Because you've got some hardcore fans, bro.
I'm very lucky. I've got some wonderful people, and you know, I still want to keep giving back to them. I'm just about to set up a Patreon. I've just taken a short break from doing my streams at the moment because I've been doing streams. I think I've done 56 weeks of streaming.
Tell them how many, because you've had so much heat off of them. You've been busy.
Yeah,
busy.
When I first started doing the streams at the end of March, when we first went into lockdown, my son said, "Dad, we need to get on and do some live streams." And at the time, I was like, "Oh, I don't know. I'm not really into streaming live. You know, I like to play in the clubs. We'll be back in the clubs soon. Don't worry, this will all blow over." He said, "Dad, we need to do it." And I was like, "All right, I trusted your judgment." And he helped set it all up. We just put a phone in front of the deck.
What's your son's DJ name again?
Future Flex.
Future Flex.
Big up, Bill.
Old type Future Flex.
And it was unbelievable. We're the first people virtually in lockdown, you know, as in the DJs who were going to try something different. Because, I mean, I know people who were doing streaming anyway. And we put the camera in front of us. And after like 3 weeks, the momentum was building huge on my Facebook. It was just on my Facebook at the time. And we had on one, I think it was on the third week, 147,000 views the following day on Facebook.
What?
I was like, are you kidding me? And I was like, oh my God. But then people started to complain and say, look, you've got to get the sound right. Because I was just like putting the phone in front of it so you could just hear it from the phone. Then we plugged the phone into the mixer. And then the phone, an iPhone, is like a mic when you plug it in. So it kept cutting out like that. And people then was like, oh, you need to do something better. So then we discovered OBS and we started doing proper streaming and then Twitch. And next minute, you know, it's just, you know, we were doing so much. And then because Bill was making house music at the time and he'd gone to do all that sort of stuff, I didn't know if it was right for him to, because I was playing predominantly hip hop and breaks.
And he was playing house music?
And he was playing house music, yeah. And I thought maybe not right for him to bring that sort of music into my crowd of people. But then I thought, you know what? I've got to give him the opportunity to do his thing. And because he was so good on the mic, he was really good on the mic. And then while I'm busy like mixing and
so
playing
sick.
Records for people, he'd be giving people shouts. And, you know, he's a good looking lad and all the girls loved him. And then people, you know, they really enjoyed what he was doing. And then I thought, let him do his thing. And then he started doing his own streams on the balcony where I live. And then he was doing some little guest spots on mine. And then slowly but surely it became a father-son stream. And every week for the, like, say, from like 20 weeks onwards, like 30-odd streams, we just done them together. And he was just like so good. And he helped me. And, you know, I can't praise him anymore. And then he started writing breakbeat records. And next thing you know, he's playing these records. And I'm playing my own son's records in my stream. And they're like one of the biggest tracks in my stream. And the reaction on Twitch
is mental.
Can't deal
with this. It's so fucking mental.
And my son, I'm playing back-to-back sets with my son, and it's leading on us to getting some socially distanced shows at the time. And people are knowing Bill without actually meeting him through the streams. This is the weirdest thing. And there were so many people that I was chatting on the streams with that I had never met in the flesh, from all over the world, from Portugal to Brazil to Chile to everywhere, a lot of places, that Argentina that I'd never been to. And I was like, oh, it's so frustrating. I just want to meet these people, want to go and play to them. And Bill was the same. And there was this like unity with everyone just loving us for giving them so much love from our music. And it just formed this bond, and the streams are just getting
talk to me about this bond. Talk to me about this bond between you and your son. That arguably actually probably one of the highlights of stories that I've actually just heard through the whole year is about you and your son just kind of combining forces. Let's get into a little bit of this, the dynamics here, because he's your boy. You brought him up, you raised him. Now all of a sudden you're on the same creative paddock. You're working together in the same environment. This must be like a four-wheel drive in your relationship. It must, I mean, obviously it comes with its own, you know, the business and pleasure thing and the family, and you know, I know that all comes into play. It's not all these roses, but there must be like this real, wow, we are really doing it. That's crazy.
It is surreal. Sometimes, you know, I take a step back. So we've got a green screen set up, like, over the last couple of months, and it looks really good. And my son's on there, and he's got his own little visuals, and I just take a step back, look at the comments that are coming through on Twitch. And then he plays his record, and his new record at the moment has got such a good vocal in. And I sing it, and I just really like it. It's called Desire. It's actually coming out on my own label as well, Instant Vibes, which is a bit of a thrill. And I just think to myself, wow, I'm so proud of my son, what he's achieved. And I didn't think it would go this way. I didn't want to be one of these pushy dads, because I'm not like that. You know, when you go to football, your dad's shouting on the touchline, screaming. And I've seen other dads do it, and I just thought, that's not a good way to...
It's not a look.
Because they end up, like, resenting you because you push them in the, in a way that they didn't want to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did that with my son, Billy, and I'm doing it with my son, Tommy Joe, who's 11, and he's a brilliant footballer, and I do see that he might have the opportunity to be maybe a pro. But the way it's nurturing and the way it's going is the same way I've done with my son. And when I got my decks at my last house in Shoreham, I left them there for my son to practice, and I said, look, and these are expensive CDJs and a really nice mixer. I said, just go and teach and do what you want. And I taught him how to do other things on there. But I wasn't a pushy dad. I wasn't, look, son, you've got to do it this way. This is the only way. Listen to me. You know, I was never like that. I was just like, I left my USB sticks in. But he went to college in Worthing and got taught by a lot of the teachers there how to write music. And then I kind of helped him with his DJing. But then he kind of taught himself, really, because he was, you know, he watched me come to a lot of shows with me, see what I was doing. And his style of DJing is slowly becoming a little bit like mine, in the sense of his mixing is really quick and really easy, and he's really relaxed with it. And that's something that, you know, you guys, when you practice, and that it's truth, practice makes perfect. Now, I'm not saying I'm a brilliant DJ or anything like that, but I can mix records quite easily now because of the amount of practice I've had and doing the streams as well each week, constantly mixing different genres and styles of records talking.
Even if I'm exactly the same as you, bro, like, it's true, practice makes perfect, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And Bill's done that, where he's been doing the streams and he's constantly practicing all the time. His mixing's got really good, and he can mix records that are maybe not even in key, which is something years ago, they've got to be in the right key, they've got to match. You know, you can mix records that are not in the right key and still make them sound really good. You just got to be clever. And it's choosing the right time to bring them out, bring them in. And that's what I've noticed Bill's starting to get really good at that. And that is something that you can't teach. It's like something that you just acquire through listening and watching and thinking, you know what, I'm going to try this. And just being clever, just being really clever.
People think that mixing in key, like you're saying, there's other ways of, you know, working a tune in and mixing and blending. I mean, you know, there's the Rodigans of the world that are just bona fide selectors.
Yeah.
And there's just an energy that falls into each mix. You know, but then when you add the mixing into it, you can't always be in key. You just got to go with the energy.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do, isn't it? It's really hard to do.
And that's what I'd say to every budding DJ out there. And it doesn't matter what form of music you're into. Go and see Fatboy Slim. Go and see Andy C. Go and see Friction. Go and watch DJ Lord from Prophets of Rage and Public Enemy.
Yeah.
Go and watch these DJ and Craze and A-Track and Scratch Bastard. That's probably, and Jazzy Jeff. They're two
Scratch
of
Bastard.
The most incredible DJs, especially Scratch Bastard. Phenomenal, like multitasking. Knowledge of music is exceptional.
Dangerous.
He's deadly. And you can learn so much because you can see how comfortable he is with what he's doing, and that portrays in how easy it is for him to do what he's doing.
But I would also like to interject, because the breakbeat scene, and I'm going to throw out some extra pioneers, Ace Skills, Decline, Stanton Warriors, Hold Tight, Don B, yourself, you guys. One thing I really admire about you guys is your enforced music policy, probably more so Stanton Warriors, I guess, but I really admire DJs and producers that hold their lane. You know what I mean? Some things go out of season and out of flavor, some things stay in flavor all the time. But with breakbeat, I've always felt like you guys, rain or shine, you hold true to your audience, you know. So just to add value to what you're saying, you have to go and see a Crafty Cuts show. You've got to go and see, because again, these are these are anchors in our street culture scene, and I do feel that, like,
oh, thanks, man.
there's a lot of value in going to a breakbeat show, full stop.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah,
value. You know what I'm saying?
When you come to like a night, say Plump DJ, Stanton Warriors,
there you go, yeah.
Decline,
yeah.
And A Skills, you're going to get a really nice cross section and genres. You're going to get maybe a little bit of house mixed flavors mixed in with the breaks, and a little bit of maybe drum and bass sort of sound.
Mm.
So you're going to get all these little flavors. It's like when you go for a curry,
mm.
you know that curry has been made of
Yo,
love.
Yeah, he said, "Cut is so true." It's
and you're
so
like,
true.
"Oh my god, this tastes so good!" And you're like really enjoying, and then you taste another bit of someone else's or whatever, and you're like, "Oh my god, that's good." When you come to one of these nights, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get good music with good quality DJs, and it's really enjoyable. There's no attitude, and you know the girls are dancing, the guys are dancing, everyone's happy, and that's what breakbeat's always been about, you know, the flavors, the style, the sound. And for me, that's what Crafty Cuts is about. It's like, I'm not saying I'm really good at what I do, but it's like a chef, he's cooking a spaghetti bolognese. When you watch like Goodfellas and all those films, and he's like, who was mixing that spaghetti bolognese, and he tells the boy, keep stirring, and the police are swarming outside and they're watching him, and he says, just keep stirring that bolognese, keep stirring that sauce, and keep adding a bit of salt, a bit of this and a bit of that. A good DJ is like, you know, a good chef. Cooks up a good bit of flavour and then dishes it out, and everyone's like, oh, that's great. You know, that's it. And that is it. When you taste good food, it's like music. When you hear good music, you're like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
And it generates emotions and power in your moods and stuff. And just like you feel so good. Like if you go for a weekend, and this is why I miss DJing so much, and you see the crowd and they love it, and you get comments back on your Twitter or your socials or whatever, and say, oh, I really enjoyed your set. It was amazing, like with Charlie or whatever. He's so good. And it just makes you feel brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's the same as a chef. When he puts your food on your plate and he sees the enjoyment that you have eating it, it's the same feeling. And that is what is so important, because with a DJ or a musician, is when you see and hear the reactions that people get to your music or your performance, it's like nothing else in the world that can beat it, whether you're playing to 50 people or 20,000 people.
I think that's where people get... First of all, actually, let me just hail up Wizard as well, as a mastering producer, fucking Wizard. Also, Farbsy Funk in Toronto, who, you know, I think he's booked us a couple of times as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Make it funky, hold tight. Yes, with people like, for instance, Mark Yardley and Dom.
Yeah.
Now, the combination there is Dom is very much the service provider. He's the ready to order guy. He'll come with loads of different ingredients, and then between Mark is the chef. He'll
amazing. It's a great combination.
Combination. And there are other examples like that. Heavy Trackers, which are a grime outfit. The Heavy Trackers are very much the same. It's a combination thing. It's a duo.
Chemical Brothers, Daft Punk.
There we go. Yeah, exactly. And there's something to be said about that dynamic. Sometimes when I see those kind of dynamics, you're like, how the fuck does that ever work? Like, you are so different to him. Or, you know, somehow it just suddenly, it works. You've got dual heads going on here, Crafty. You've got two things going on at once that some duos just match for match. You've got both, you have to do both of them, which I think to a lot of people that are listening in on this is quite a... And then you go on tour as well. And then you've got to do the promo for this. You come around to the podcast. You know, it's all these different things. And it's quite a lot to take on in a...
When I look back at my career and I look about some of the things that I've achieved and some of the things that I've done, I just can't believe how quickly those things happened and came about. But, like, I remember when I first started, it took so long to get those breaks.
Mm.
You know, Sonic Mook Experiment in London... DJing in certain venues, DJing at a bar.
Honey Club, Zap, all those places in Brighton.
I mean, check this out. I DJed at a bar in Brighton when I first had my record shop every Friday for about a year, every single Friday before I met Lloyd School of Thought and set up Supercharge. And it had the most god-awful name ever, called Skid Row. And it was the back of a back street in Brighton. And I was like, but check this out, negative to positive. It's like I thought, you know what? I enjoy the fact that I'm DJing and I've been given an opportunity. And I literally got paid peanuts to do it for like 4 hours every Friday night from like 7 to 11. But it taught me to be a better DJ because people would walk in, so early doors, I'd be playing like light, funky music. And then as the evening progressed, I'd be playing sort of more danceable stuff. And everyone was like, by the end, by 11 o'clock, everyone was like, more. Mm. So it taught me to become a better DJ. And then when I started doing Supercharged with Lloyd at Funky Buddha, again, you know, sometimes when we didn't book acts and I'd do the whole 4 hours from from 10 till 2, I would play warm up, middle, bangers at the end. So I'd learn from like hip hop, the Mo Wax trip hop stuff to like breaks and then drum and bass and mix all these things in to make me a better DJ. And with all these experiences and stuff like that, it helped just develop me as a better artist, and it also helped within my production. And if you look at all my albums, there's little flavours combined in there and different vocalists, rappers, singers and stuff like that, and with good artwork, you know, Let's Ride, Freak Show, Trick of Technology, Adventures of a Reluctant Superhero, all really good artwork, all really good vocalists on there, all interesting music. And it was taking influences from little bits, but I didn't go fully down one path. I mean, I did touch on the electro house scene and combine that into my sound and a little bit of the dubstep and stuff like that, but I didn't go fully fledged and think, right, fuck off all
no,
the
but
other
this
stuff.
Was, this was also at a time where, you know, likes of Basement Jacks were experimenting and doing things as well. Like this was, I remember that. I remember you touching on these times, but it was all for the time. It didn't feel like it was out of context.
I didn't go off the rails and suddenly make a whole album that was just dubstep or electro house. I just used some of those elements. Like when I done the Crafty Cuts Re-Rubs album, I loved some of the electro house stuff and some of the house music, but I turned it into breakbeat sort of flavours. And everyone's like, oh, I really like this because I like that house record, but I'm not really into house music, but I like it. But now I can play it in my set because it was like it had a break underneath it, or it would chopped about. So I was editing all these records, and it was just what I did. And you know, some people didn't like it, and can't please everyone, but it was something that I liked, and I got a little fan base from it, and it helped in developing where I am today.
But do you
and
think
become
that,
a better DJ?
Do you think
as well?
That comes with seasonal? Do you think, as like you say, now you play a little bit more house? I think house music, well, in retrospect to now, has changed so much.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's those influences like Basement Jacks. It is the Prodigy. It is all
Chemical
these...
Chemical Brothers,
certainly. That really forced a
certain change within house music. And now where we are now, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still that good core element of like the disco sort of sound with it, and we all love a good disco house record.
Yeah, big up Scream and the likes that are doing their thing, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's good to see Ollie, you know, posting a lot of some of his new music that he's writing on Twitter, and it's great. And he's such a fun guy to be around, and a lot 100%. Of that crew, you know. But like, I was very lucky that the energy that I put into my music and my DJing kind of people got. You know, when they come watch a Crafty Cut show, you know, I'd have four decks set up or three decks. I was mixing records. I was scratching. I was dropping acapellas. I had Dynamite to do all my shout outs. So it was a show. It wasn't just mixing records. It was kind of everything. And I was jumping up and down like a crazy man behind the decks to try and create. That was the hardest thing, to get that confidence to shine behind the decks. And you know, I wasn't on the mic, but I was you know, lively behind the decks. And I got a residency at Fabric. And then I was playing all the big clubs around the UK and the world, and I was doing tours and doing really big things in Australia. You know, I'd done the Big Day Out tour with Dynamite, which was just exceptional.
Bonkers. I did one of those dates once. I mean, I know that was unheard of because you have to do all of them, but I do remember doing one.
Oh, you done one?
Yeah,
they were the best shows of my life. Like, I've never experienced anything
Australia
like it.
Loves that breakbeat business.
They did, yeah, and they still do. Yeah. And that really helped me. And this is the thing that I don't understand. And you guys, you
comment
know,
below.
Yeah, comment below, because this I would find this fascinating. So I'd go to Australia, and really, to me, Australia, Canada, and the UK, we're all in the Commonwealth. We're all very similar in terms of, like, you know, what we hear, we kind of, you know, carries on and becomes popular. So I'd go out to Australia and I'd perform to like 40,000 people, 20,000 people, and they absolutely loved it. But then in the UK, it was kind of like, they still liked it, but those opportunities weren't available to me. And I could never really figure that out. It's not that I felt that I deserved those opportunities and I should have those opportunities, but if I'm getting those opportunities in Australia and in Canada and sometimes in America. Why can't I get these opportunities constantly in the UK? Don't get me wrong, I did have some fantastic experiences at Glastonbury and Clapham Common and Global Gatherings and the Glade Festival and Festival and stuff like that. But in England, we you know, pre-COVID...
You had to fight your corner.
You did, and there was... Oh, my God, we have got so many festivals in the UK. But it was quite strange that, like, you know, the breakbeat movement could have been even huger in the UK because it's something that we created... And you could have seen these DJs constantly. I think it's just timing, you know. A lot of the breakbeat artists kind of broke away from the scene and went on to do other things. And I think maybe that contributed in the same way as dubstep kind of like broke away and found its fame in America, let's say.
I was going to say dubstep is a great example, actually, of talk about being shunned in the UK, like almost like, oh, it's that season now, bye. And then next they're in America killing it. Can't get a fucking gig for love nor money in the UK.
UK, it's fallen off, isn't it? And it's like the breakbeat scene kind of got dealt that card as well.
Why do you? I mean, it's a really good question. What's your theory on that?
Well, basically what happened was the Spanish scene came in and they liked it a lot faster and harder. And then a lot of people started making that sound. And then predominantly a lot of the bigger acts within the breakbeat scene, I'm not going to mention any names, they kind of didn't like that sound. The new school breaks, as it might have been, or the kind of like 140 sort of dubstepy style breakbeat, noisy, leery sort of stuff. And then people in the UK, it wasn't their thing. It was working well in Spain, so people didn't really enjoy that sort of sound. So suddenly the people who are making breakbeat sound, I don't want to go with that style. And then they start discovering more house orientated music or deeper sort of tech house. And they kind of went into that. And a lot of the big and artists and names were lost over the 6 month period. And those names were integral to making the breakbeat movement as what it was. And because they were doing awards ceremonies at Fabric, with the Breaks Pole Awards.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, there were some big names and big acts, and it was being played on Radio 1.
Big up Derek DeLarge as well. The big beat world and, you know.
Derek DeLarge, oh, my God, yeah, from FSUK.
Yeah, he's anywhere in a corner.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
And, you know, the likes of, like, luckily enough, we've still got, like, the Plump DJs and Stantons and Freestylers and Decline and myself. Yeah. But, you know, Freak Nasty and Adam Freeland and Meet Katie. And, you know, all these names, they're kind of lost.
Yeah.
And they ventured elsewhere, and it never came back.
Adam Freeland was a duke. He was a don.
He had a...
he had his thing going on.
He did, yeah. He had... when I had my record shop in Brighton, I had Dave Stone at the top, who ran Botchit and Scarpa and Movement, the drum and bass night. And then in the middle floor, I had Marine Parade, which was Adam
Freeland.
That's
right, yeah.
And he had a girl working for him called Jem, who went on to make pop music, and she'd done an album, kind of like that Lily Allen sort of sound.
Really?
And she'd become a huge success. And so we had Adam Freeland in the middle, and then we had myself with my record store.
Insane.
And then downstairs we had the Techno Demons in the basement.
Legacy shit, see? You see what I mean?
And Ed Solo was upstairs.
Hold tight,
Dave
Ed Solo.
Stone. And, oh, my God, I had so many great people come in my record store.
Great record labels. Catskills,
they were amazing. Brighton. Johnny, they were Brighton. And then, obviously, Skin. And then you had Mick Fuller, who was doing that.
Skin, yeah.
Yeah, there were so many good things happening around that time.
Rec
one. He done some stuff on Skin. He was a great graffiti.
Great. Fuckest up his crew, hold tight. She and Rec. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, and there was a lot of creative people in Brighton. It was a hub for a lot of fantastic things that were spreading itself across the UK and the world. And I was lucky to be in that period at that time.
But do you think that, because just going back to what you were saying about breakbeat and how it's the flavours of it go in and out month by month, but I feel like, and I can only say this from my point of view doing podcast beatboxing, if you're in the mix, you're in the mix, isn't it? If you know these people, you know these people. It's like, I see these documentaries about punk music in New York and, like, next thing, there's Chuck D talking about how influenced he was with punk music. And
really?
It was almost, well, yeah, because New York was it's
like
creative
a hub.
But yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And the disco scene.
Yeah.
And the hip-hop scene. A lot of things born out of New York, weren't they?
And it's the
and
same
it's like
here.
Brighton.
Yeah,
Big
same, exactly.
And sort of like, I wouldn't say breakbeat was predominantly born from.
Trip-hop. I think trip-hop
yeah,
played
trip-hop
a big part.
Definitely played a big part. And then, obviously, the Mowax and Skint stuff from there, definitely. And I remember I played a gig once in Brighton. It was one of the most I was so in awe. Jazzy Jeff came to Brighton. It was his first time. And they asked me to do the warm-up. And and I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm about to warm up for the most incredible DJ on the planet.
Great question.
And I was playing, like, trip-hop stuff and you know, mixing in with hip-hop. And I knew that Jeff would be playing all the classic hip-hop stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought, no, don't go on before. Because he wasn't like Grandmaster Flash, where you'd get a list of all the records that you couldn't play. Jeff was never like that.
The notorious list.
So, yeah, the list. And I thought, but I'm not going to play like loads of like Gangstar, Pete Rock, Public Enemy, The Message, and just all the classic hip hop thing. I'm going to try and do something different here. So, trip hop was like kind of like this cool instrumental hip hop flavored sound. And I thought I'd play some of the more down tempo sort of stuff before he went on. And he's. Tour manager, and I went for it as well. I brought my own mixer, which he loved and used, and he signed it. And
not a basic evening at all.
Yeah, and I played a really cool set, and Jeff was really appreciative. He was like, he came in and he saw about a good half hour of it, and he played a really good set. He cut dancers, drummers, beat what I'd been waiting for to hear for years. And his tour manager came up to me while Jeff was playing. And he put his arm around me. He said, "Dude, that's one of the best warm-up sets we've had, simply because you just
didn't..." Darnell, was his name Darnell?
Yeah, big
up Darnell, yeah.
And he said to me, "I really enjoyed it." And Jeff was really appreciative that you didn't touch on loads of stuff that he might have played. And it was such a great feeling to know that I'd done something really special for one of my favourite DJs. And I thought, yes, get in there. And the same thing happened with Cash Money when he won the World Mixing Finals in 1988. I was there and watching him. And then when I won an award at Breaks Poll, he was there with his tour manager from Manchester. He used to tour him, Jack. And I'd met him a few times and just shook hands and, you know, friendly gestures. And then he come up to me, he put his arm around me, he goes, "You're a crafty man, I'm proud of you for winning that award, big up, fella." And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Cash Money has just come up to me and picked me up for winning an award. So I've had some incredible moments that I just, you know, chase your dreams, people, do your thing. And if you're good and you practice, good things will help. Facts. And always watch and learn from other people that might not be your chosen field, but you can gain something from it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot on YouTube, and there's a lot of people that you can follow on Instagram and Twitch that you can pick up helpful tips from.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've done that over, you know, YouTube was a big thing, and obviously going to shows and watching DJs. Yeah. And I'm lucky, you know, touring as well has helped me been on platforms and stages where there's been people that I'd not heard of and come away and thinking, wow, that person's really good.
Yeah. Well, in terms of upcoming, I mean, obviously your son, for starters, but in the breakbeat world, like who are you seeing at the moment where you're like, yeah, like they're killing it?
There's a lot of these Spanish guys. There's Yo Speed, there's Gower and the 83 label, and there's another label in America called Toast and Jam. And that whole kind of like bass scene has developed into like that old kind of like old school Miami bass sound again. So, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I love it.
And it just makes you want to go like that.
Yeah, listen, he pulls out some moves on his show, man. I've seen some moves on his Twitch. I'm like, yeah, you got the B-boys going again.
So that whole kind of sound has helped push into the breakbeat scene. And a lot of the old cats like Crystal Method and DJ Icy coming back through. But then obviously you've got like some of the new guys like Frankie Wah and Bonobo and Totally Extinct Dinosaur.
Oh, Teed.
And all these guys are making really cool breakbeat sounds. So to me, I feel like the breakbeat sound has come back again in a slightly different way. Not so, a little bit slower, more slightly epic, more musical, but just really nice. And I think that, it's having a bit of a resurgence at the moment. And, you know, I still make some breakbeat stuff, not as much as I'd like to, because it's quite difficult, really, to quite make. I find making hip-hop is a little bit easier. I think that's because I just love sampling stuff and kind of get inspired by funk and you know, whatever I hear at the time. And that's why I'm writing a new hip-hop album at the moment, and I've got some cool guests on there, like Fat Lip from Far Side.
Yeah, but anyone says, like, Fat Lip, you know, that, and I spoke to Craze about this, that Bizarre Ride to the Far Side, which I got at your store, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Bro, what? Like, that was...
Again, yeah. Album cover, brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
The Funfair, like, the best. Roller coaster.
Couldn't believe, I think I asked him about that.
Come on, coloured vinyl as well, didn't it?
That's right, double, yeah.
Double, right. It was a yellow and a white that's vinyl, right. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Working with these people, like, and Lyrics Born, I've done a couple of tracks with Charlie. Oh, my God, you wait till you hear the track with Charlie and Dynamite called Worldwide Echo. It's like nothing I've ever wrote, and it's like something I've always wanted to write. I spoke to Charlie and said to him, mate, this is something that I've always wanted to do, and he was like, bang into it, and big up Dynamite, because you smashed it on this.
Mm.
And I've done a couple of other tracks with Dynamite, done a wicked track with Scarlett Quinn. What a voice she's got.
Oh, yeah, Scarlett, hold tight, Scarlett.
Yeah, yes. She's got an amazing voice.
She's got a great voice.
She has. And I've done a really cool track with her. I've done lots of different types of music for this next album. And also, during the course of writing this next hip-hop album, I thought, you know what, I'm going to go back in on the Adventures album, Adventures of Reluctant Superhero, and I'm going to remix the whole album.
You remixed the whole thing?
I'm into 12, maybe 13 tracks, I've only got three more to do. So that's going to be re-released, called The Readventures. And Jake is going to do some new artwork to go with that. And big up everyone who was involved in the Adventures album. You know, I can't thank you guys enough. And I'm really excited about that. So... let me see, probably October we'll have the album remixed, probably come in coloured vinyl, new sleeve, and maybe and a couple of new tracks in there as well. But the remixes are really cool, all hip-hop remixes. One of them is just probably one of the best things I've ever done with Alex Chambers. It's called Intro, which is the first track. Wait till you guys hear it. It's like spaghetti western on acid.
Jesus Christ.
with a hip-hop flavour. It is a mental tune. It just builds, go crazy. I played it on my stream and the reaction was phenomenal. So keeping myself busy, like, writing music is
my
vice.
You've always been like this. It's the energy, the enthusiasm. I feel like, Don't you ever have a moment where you're like...
Yeah, I have done recently. I've, like, had a few lapses where I've just, like, you know, not felt depressed and stuff like that, but just felt a little bit down, a little bit negative, a little bit exhausted, just, like, all my creative juices have been zapped from me. Kind of, like, it's really weird, like, that whole superhero thing, because there's a lot of new series on TV of superheroes. There's one called Jupiter's Legacy or something. I think I started watching it. And it's, like, sometimes, you know... I'm not saying I'm a superhero, but, like, you know, you have all these things that you've acquired and done and achieved, and you kind of think, I just feel like, although the year I haven't done as much as I'd like to, I actually have, like, doing a stream every week, putting a whole new DJ set together each week, and researching and finding new music that you haven't played, plus learning to talk and communicate on the microphone, which has never been my forte, is a new experience for me. And getting the setup right, but it's quite nerve-wracking making sure that everything rolls and you've got all these people waiting and wanting to see you do something and of a high level.
I just add value to that as well while we're on this subject, because I think that does take a lot of stress to do. And you know, you don't always... Okay, you'll get told when something's shit, but you actually won't get told when something's great. If you've managed to achieve with as less stress as possible, the best you can possibly provide, and people don't say anything, it normally means it's okay. It's a kind of thankless task when you're doing these things, and you people don't know how much it takes in the back end to try and figure it out.
No, exactly right there. And that's what exhausted me for like a year doing these streams, while also looking after my two young children, Rosie and Tommy, who are 6 and 11, and also trying to find money because, my career was just stopped dead. So I'd be earning good money and I never saved my money. I wasn't very good at, like, protecting my money, so I'd just spend it on my kids, on my family, on my friends, having a good time, having a nice house and stuff like that. And then suddenly, like, oh, shit, what am I going to do? I should have saved. I should have put this away because I just didn't expect it. So I had to make ends meet. And a big thanks to everyone who donated on coffee and stuff to keep me going. And the streams were like a really good way of me exerting myself with all my knowledge of music. And there's some really good things still to come. I'm going to be doing some different streams. So I've stopped doing my streams for a few weeks. to go back, reevaluate, and make it better. I built a studio in my garage with a little bit of money that I do have. And I'm going to make my streams better. I'm going to do some more like podcasty type streams where I play music that inspired me.
Ooh, fucking great.
And then talk about those tracks to people and say, why did Hashim Al-Nafish the Soul, why did it help me conjure up these tracks that I did? And Jurassic 5, you know, Concrete Schoolyard, I used that on my first ever mix that I'd done called Slam the Brakes On. And then I ended up working with Jurassic 5. And
fulfilling prophecies.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And thinking about things that I never dreamed of that can happen. And they can happen to each and every one of us if you put your mind to it. You know, if you want to be a really good yoga instructor, you watch all the videos, you get really good at it, you practice. Next minute, you know, you might be doing it and then you might go to a place in Thailand and you might be teaching with some of the best people in the world or whatever it might be. You know, like camera work and stuff like that. You know, you might think, oh, I'd love to be involved in movies and stuff, and you might go on a course that teaches you how to use a camera, and then suddenly your knowledge and wisdom and knowing about that camera and how good you can take photos and video
truth stuff.
Next minute, you know, you do something, someone sees you, like, I really like that, and then you might be working on a film set as like, you know, just back bit herping someone, and the next minute, you know, in a couple of years' time, you're shooting the next bloody Superman movie or Batman movie or something.
1,000%. And your testament to this, again, Crafty Cuts, you make something out of nothing, a positive out of a negative. It's, and I think that is the only way to process those journeys. You know, okay, we've all suffered immensely, one way or another, with what happened with
setbacks,
lockdown.
Yeah.
And setbacks. Yeah, setbacks, and life happens and stuff. But if you can come out the other side with more value than what you left with, then that's fucking mission complete, isn't it?
Huh? It's like what you're doing with your podcast. You've had, you know, if you look back and you put all those names together on one sheet, you'd be like gobsmacked. You think, oh my God, I can't believe this. And like, if you said 15 years ago, I'd be speaking with all these people, you'd say, if I said that to you, you'd say, nah, you're having a laugh. You know, Goldie and Doc Scott and Stanton Warriors, whoever it may be.
Yeah.
The list is, you know, there's some brilliant people on that list. And like we were talking about the Corrupt guys, you know, how long you'd wanted to get them on your show. And, you know, they're interesting people. They've done something that's created something amazing for people. And, you know, each and every one of the people that you've had on have done something and contributed something special to the music business in this country. And this country is a very special place for that. You know, whether some of these artists are living, like Goldie lives in Thailand, and like Chris Lorenzo is one of the biggest sort of house, bass house producers. He lives in Los Angeles. And like Jack Beats, you know, he lived in...
He lived
in Los Angeles for a while,
yeah,
didn't
that's
he?
That's right, yeah.
And a lot of people, you know, but they're still, if they're talented, will still be doing something, even if you're not aware of exactly what they're doing. They're still involved in one shape or form, part of this industry.
I told you from the jump when first I said, dude, I was so surprised that you weren't in my first 50, because you and me go back so far, and the conversations, I think, will always remain timeless. It's fucking great to have you on, man.
Oh, thanks, man. You know, really appreciate that.
It's been good.
It has been really good. It's been emotional. I've been like thinking about some incredible memories that I've had, and those moments when you come into my shop, that tiny little shop that I worked so hard to keep my head above water. And it was funny, because when I finished both my record shops, I had one in Worthing and one in Brighton, and I was going backwards and forwards, and my ex-wife would be in one, and then I had Mex working in the Brighton one, and a few other people, and I lost so much money from having a record shop. It's just, I'm not very good with money, unfortunately. But when I finished in that record shop, I had like 25 grand's worth of debt, that I owed the VAT people money, but I thought, I'm not going to go bankrupt, I'm going to pay that off, and I'm going to fight to keep my head above water and rebuild my life, because I split up with my wife and I was living in a shithole in Brighton, and I had 25 grand's worth of debt. I had a really shitty car. I had nothing going for me in that respect, but the Crafty Cut stuff was just being born. And I was just starting to write some really good music.
Out of the ashes.
Yeah. And I took that, all that negative, and built a positive, and the Crafty Cuts thing, you know, good things started to appear, supercharged, and then starting tours in Australia. and then suddenly gigs in America,
music
and
sync
Canada.
And things like that, yeah.
And yeah, I got a sync for a music thing. Unbelievable. You're not going to believe this, guys. I'd done a track with Ed Solo that was in my shop, HVR, and I even used TC Islam on it as well, ill type sound. We got the groove, we got the sound, we got the vibe to make you get down.
Ill type TC Islam, woo!
It was used on the Coca-Cola commercial, which we got really well paid for. Yeah. And then they used it for 1 year when ITV done Match of the Day stopped, and ITV came in and done a year of the football premiership. It might have been the Football League at the time. No, it was the premiership. And they'd done the premiership for a year, and they used ill-type sound as the...
Your head must have gone off on this football tip. You must have been like, no way.
I was like, couldn't believe it. Every time football came on ITV, bam, bam, we got the groove, we got the sound. It was ill-type sound. And then we signed that to Finger Licking Records, and that was my... time of Finger Licking and all that lot. And that Finger Licking was in Camden, and that was like, a hub for all the breakbeat producers. And there's a great photo online that you can see, and there's all the breakbeat producers all together, all in one picture. And it's like there's about 20 of us. And it brings back great memories from a lot of the good times.
Mate, these are seminal moments in your career, but, like, you know, just from ashes come to... Life is about many lives, isn't it? And funnily enough, what the narrative of the whole conversation is, if you experience this and you experience that, it does formulate into something. It morphs into something else. Like if you hadn't have been the record store, and if you hadn't been the budding DJ, if you hadn't done your fingers in, and you know all of these factors,
I wouldn't be sat here talking to you now.
That's what I'm saying.
I wouldn't have done all these travels. I wouldn't have met all these people, and I probably wouldn't have. It is a really interesting fact of that. So I was going to Dubai a lot and DJing, and this was it before I'd done the DJing in Dubai with A Skills. Actually, I was playing these really big festivals called Sand Dance or something, funny enough, a strange name. And then I started, no, this is actually before those, and I remember going to a club and it was so hot, like it was like 30 degrees, 40 degrees at night,
that Dubai
and coming out, and you'd open the door, so you'd been in a air conditioned, and then you'd open the door and it's like an oven and like hitting you. So I went out there to DJ, just a normal thing in Dubai, playing a set. And I met this girl there called Kate. And if I hadn't have met her that night, I wouldn't have my children, because she then moved back to England. And we got together, and then we had two children, Rosie and Tommy. So if I hadn't gone to Dubai and played that gig, I'd never have met her, and I wouldn't have two beautiful children along with my twins, Billy and Harry. Yeah. So life throws things at you that you'd never expect. You know, and you could talk about some of the people that you've met through your travels and how they've altered your life in certain ways, or brought joy or pain, whatever it might be.
But bro, like, and again, we're just going back to the first times I experienced hip-hop was in your shop.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes you put yourself in those places, and it's a conduit. You're just going along with it, because I don't think you ever thought twice about music being in your life.
No.
But to be given that opportunity to run with a particular ball and saying, actually, you know what? I kind of know that guy. I know that I'm going to run with this. Some people don't have that instinct in them, and that's what's special. Is that you may know everybody, you may have a phone book to die for, but if you ain't got no reason to be calling people, you know.
That's a really good point. Yeah, and I think, you know, your path when you used to come into my shop was set, because I was like, wow, this guy's an interesting guy. You know, he could do this beatbox crazy style. And I was just like, you know, blown away. And I think a lot of people were. And then suddenly, you know, you started showcasing your talents, and now you're doing your podcasts because you just have your knowledge of meeting people and seeing people's journeys.
As you go, yeah.
And it's like we all choose what we feel is a really good path for us. Beatboxing is one of those difficult things, because it's one of those things that people love, but it's not something that you could constantly keep doing day in, day out, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you need to find another thing as well.
Yeah.
Whereas DJing is just one of those things where, you know, it's just accepted.
It's a soundtrack for people's full stop, whatever they're doing in an evening. They don't have to necessarily know the music or the DJ, but it's a soundtrack as much as
it's
the environment, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, we do choose our paths. And if you choose it correctly and you put a lot of time, effort and work into it, hence why you're, you know, what you're doing now and what I'm doing now, You get really good at it.
Yeah, you get quick at it, don't you?
Yeah, you get, and it's like second nature. Yeah. And sometimes as you get older, you get better.
Yeah,
not worse.
Yeah,
it's not like a footballer or, you know, a racing driver. As they slowly get older, obviously, you know, their reactions become not quite as quick as what they were. You know, and like I played football last night and my legs are absolutely killing me. And I wish I didn't feel like that.
I love that you still play football.
I love football.
I remember going into the store, and I don't know who you're with. I think they were all just music guys as well. But I used to be so purist about like hip hop and stuff, and I'd just hear you guys talking about football, and I'm like, this isn't hip hop, you know. It's but you guys used to love football, dude. Yeah. I remember you guys used to talk about it. I don't know who was in there. Mex was in there. I think he.
Yeah, Mex didn't like football.
Yeah,
there's a lot of DJs who don't like football, but there's a lot of other musicians and artists who bloody do like football. You know, there's quite a few of them are big Liverpool fans.
But it's a release for a lot of, you know, it's not all one dimensional, isn't it? And I think that's what the world is now. The last thing the world is in music is one dimensional.
That's a good point. You know, if you think about like a career now, it's not one dimensional. Years ago, it would be, you know, in terms of like, you know, practicing your skill and your art. Now you've got to learn about social media. That is what one of the biggest parts. And we were talking about
huge.
This earlier.
Yeah.
And I remember years ago when I first started doing social media, I was posting a lot of stuff on my page that was probably nothing really to do with Crafty Cuts. But it was fun. I really enjoyed it. And it was a good way of, you know, escapism. But I thought I need to put a stop to this. I need people to see me for what I really am. And they were fun things to watch. I mean, people know that side of me, that I'm a quirky, funny sort of guy. But I wanted people to appreciate my music, my DJing and other things in life that I felt that I was really good at. And that wasn't being portrayed within the stuff that I was promoting. And you learn this within social media. And then when I start to push like my music and my shows and my skill traits, people were appreciating it more rather than, say, a video of a cat singing or a dog dancing or someone jumping at an extremely incredible height or something. You know, they're fantastic, don't get me wrong, and it is fun to watch, but not from Crafty Cuts. You know, people want to see, you know, things related to me or something that's about me. And I feel like it's really important now for me to kind of go on that path and do that for me personally. And don't get me wrong, I still post up some funny little clips and little pieces that have humoured me at the time, but not in the same way as I used to. And I feel like I feel really pleased about that now because my music and my clips of me DJing are getting so much more interaction. And it's funny how much we really rely on social media. It's like we were talking earlier. If you put a video up or one of your podcasts and it got hardly any views, it would be disappointing for you because you're like, what have I done wrong? Why is it like this? And it is important for us to get likes or support on what we're doing because it just keeps building and building and growing and growing. And if we didn't get that, or if we didn't, a lot of people don't want to share people's stuff. I'm the opposite. I'm not like, if someone's done something, I will share that and push it. Why not? Why don't we all help together?
What people doesn't realize, but people, some people don't realize, is that like may not, you may not appreciate in total the thing that you're liking, but it pushes an algorithm to a newer eyes, set of eye and ears that may like it, and that's the. That's really the objective, isn't it? To anything that you want to post is like, okay, well, hopefully I've got a hardcore fan group that would honour the fact that I'm supportive of this, or I love this, and let it fly, let them be the vehicles to take it to the next set of eyes and ears. You know, they're
that's
sharing.
That's a bloody good point. The vehicle to new people is really important. You know, for example, you do a podcast and like I think you had Doc Scott on the other week, and if I reposted it or shared it to my fans, they might go, oh, I didn't realise Doc Scott done 31 seconds or run 31 records, sorry. And all these things that he used to do. And same with Groove Rider and Vadim or whoever you might have had on your show, Stanton Warriors, they might have not realised that they remixed Basement Jacks or AC Gray or whatever. And like, oh, I forgot that they'd done that. Or Doom's Night or whatever.
Because the legacy's so deep.
Yeah, and the same with the freestylers and whoever. You know, it's really important that we, as artists and musicians, that we share each other's products and achievements and things that we do. Obviously, if you're into it and you enjoy it, but it really helps out as an artist. Yeah. You know, instead of being like, oh, I don't want to share that. I'm all about myself.
Never understood it.
It's really important that we all work as a team and help each other out to push these things further so that they grow and become bigger,
especially
which
when
leads on to other
especially
things.
When they're not in your genre. When you see something that is like super light out there and may not be your taste in music, but you like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, well, actually, my audience might like that. And it's giving, it's enhancing people's understanding or discovering of new things. You have to. That's just part of the music. That's part of the music conversation, isn't it?
Yeah. Sorry to drag this on, but it's a really interesting theory here.
Yeah, go for it.
So people obviously know that there's a link with Fatboy Slim with me, but you wouldn't think that he would be my... Him and Jazzy Jeff are the two most important people within my development of my career. I'll tell you why. Jazzy Jeff, from the perspective of his scratching and his ability as a turntable DJ, but Norman Cook, for his ability to react with the crowd and to play a record at the right time, and just his incredible attitude behind the turntables, and him being also such a very nice person, really helped me grow confidence as a DJ behind the decks, and showing that I'm not a shy DJ, and just like not you know, being a bit within myself, because we were all like that at one stage. In terms of like, oh, this is a bit nerve-wracking in playing in front of all these people, and you could be really shy and not and just do your thing. But when you're confident and you stand tall, oh my god, people are like, oh my god, this guy's really good. And
it gives them
smiling.
Confidence. It gives them confidence to
and
like
they breathe on your energy, and that's what Norman did. And Jazzy Jeff was just so good. So you combine those two elements together, and it really helped me. And then seeing other DJs like mix records, like Roger Sanchez and Youssef, watching them DJ and mix records seamlessly, like I've never seen before. I was like, oh my god! And I was like, how did they do that? So I practiced and learned to blend and mix records as well as scratching, and then as well as being confident behind the decks. All these different DJs and Cash Money as well. I learned to become so much of a better DJ, and so grateful to Norman and to Jeff and even like Scratch Bastard now, watching him, it's like, oh my god, he's just so good. I need to up my game. I need to be better. And watching these people do that, and A Skills as well, he's a really good DJ. You got to watch his streams on Thursday night. Fantastic, absolutely brilliant. And Scratch Bastard does his coffee morning thing, and there's the other guys like the Next Men. Oh my god, those guys are so good.
Big up Brad and Dom. Yeah, all day Next Men.
And Eva Lazarus as well, though. She's got a new track out with them guys, and Gentleman's Dub Club and Mungo's Hi-Fi, and all these guys are making such good music. And big up to the UK scene. And you know, we have got so many talented artists that I just am loving that are coming through at the moment.
Hey, listen, if you don't know, get to know all these people that, you know what I mean, we're going to pick them up later, but these names, we're dropping them for a reason. Make sure you check out all of these artists. Crafty man, I mean, holding it down, like, you literally are. Not only does he show you the selections and the new music, he tells you about the artists that are out there as well.
I'm actually feeling like my best is to come in terms of my music. I've still got great. My DJing's got better through doing the streams. I think I've got a better selector, and my engagement with the crowd is really strong in terms of, like, you know, when I talk to people, I'm seeing them and hearing what they like and what they love. So that's made me become a better selector. And then also, you know, a better producer by playing all different forms of music, thinking, you know what, that'd be a good idea if I'd done this. And then suddenly, you know, next week I'm working in the studio. Big up Alex Chambers, who I work with.
Old Alex.
He's amazing. He's like, you know, I love working with this guy. And without him, you know, Crafty Cuts wouldn't be anything that I am at the moment. But I've worked with some amazing producers and engineers like Ed Solo, Chris Sargent, and A Skills. You know, these guys are phenomenal at what they do. And I think that most producers and DJs, when they do get to work with such great engineers and producers, you know, we are blessed. You know, like this, we were talking about Dom with Mark Yardley, and Lee Rouse and Andy Gardner are just fantastic, and Matt and Aston together, this, and the Chemical Brothers and Daft Punk and all these people, you know, greatness does come in twos and obviously in singles as well. But I wouldn't be where I am with the help of others as well, you know.
For real. I feel you. And once you've got that formula, once you've got the right balance of chemistry and the thing, it's just hard to find, you know. Producers have this way of... they work very sympathetically to the artists that they're, you know, that they're partnering with. I really value that in a good producer. That it's selfless, it's egoless.
Nice. Yeah, you know? Yeah, you're right there. And I love, this is my most enjoyable thing, is seeing new artists rise and become really good at what they do, because it's so enjoyable to see that person really good at what they do and getting the recognition of what they do.
I can vouch for this. It's 100% true. He's always been super supportive of me, for real. Not one time. I remember calling up the shop when I was coming up, and you were like, oh, will you come to the shop? Come to the shop if you're passing through after the gig. You know, you were always that guy.
Oh, thanks, mate. Yeah. I've lived and breathed music since I lost my fingers and had my record shop and started writing music and DJing and travelling the world. And my fans are just as important as I am, you know. They're imperative to what makes me what I am. And all the people that come to the shows and support, people that watch the streams and people that look at podcasts and stuff like that. You know, if you didn't support all these things, then obviously, you know, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, and the same as Lee as well, you know.
Yeah. Well, on that note, big up the Crafty Cuts inside the place. Thank you so much for passing through.
Lee, thanks for having me, man. It's been emotional.
It's been
a ride.
Told you it would be. If you don't know about Crafty Cuts, get to know. You follow him. He's got his Twitch stream that's popping. He's got the new albums that are coming. He's got the shows that are about to be storming across different countries and universes, whether the UK likes it or not. We are Lee Evans, Out of Fashion, People Killer Podcast. Don't talk to anyone, I wouldn't. Stay lucky, people. Peace.